I mean, how do I describe it? It's
bold.
A light.
Black.
Unapologetically black.
Very funny, amusing.
Caring.
You give great advice from a different perspective. Passionate.
Free.
Vulnerable.
A creative.
Sexy.
My girl is lit as fuck.
Always ready to work a little some.
Genuine, very genuine.
Resilient.
Like, sixth sense, otherworldly. If you know, you know.
It's so vibrant, baby.
Oh, I actually miss hearing that opening. Hello, 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 everyone. And welcome to So Vibrant, the place where music, history, and culture collide. I am your cultural storyteller and award-winning host, Lady AC. I missed y'all so much. I hope y'all miss me. It feels so good to bring Soul Vibing back and be back behind the mic. Because if you didn't notice, I have been gone for some time. Especially, I think, in my anniversary episode, I mentioned something to the effect of that I was going on a health sabbatical. And I wanted to just be honest about what was going on and what has been going on since I made that episode. And the truth is that literally a couple of days after that episode aired, I had to go into surgery. And I wanted all my energy, all my focus to be prepared and geared for the prep, for the surgery itself, and then of course for the aftercare afterwards, because it was estimated that I also would be in the hospital for a week at that time. So it was really up in the air. So I just knew, but I didn't know I had to stay overnight at least. So I wanted to physically prepare for all of that. And while I was fully aware, understanding what was going to happen and how it was going to play out, what I was not prepared for was the emotional and mental healing I had to go through along with that as well. And that actually inspired today's show because I want to talk about it. But before we dive deep down into that and I tell you all what has been going on since I left the mic, I gotta hit you with the Soul Vibrant way of giving y'all some good music, because one thing in my downtime when I was healing and recuperating was I got to listen to some good music to lift my spirits and keep me going through that process. And two of my favorite songs I want to play for y'all today. With that being said, here is our first musical break and I'll be right back.
If he loves you truly, how could
That was Kamal featuring Audie Oasis with Mango. Love, love, love that song right there. I know I say that by all the music I play on this show, but that song got me through my recovery period. Like, I wore it out because I just love the energy of it and the vibe of it. But most importantly, I love a good love song. And I love that they talk about what love is and how it should feel and the connection of it. And especially me being a lover girly and really being on this love energy that I have been on. That song just perfectly summed up everything to uplift me, especially during such an emotional, mental, and physical time within my life. Because the physical healing was the easy part. It was the emotional and mental aspect that took so much of my energy. And I didn't realize exactly how deep it was for me until someone brought it to my attention. Because during the process of recovery, of course, I had a lot of family and friends check and call on me. And at this time, I was learning how to receive love and allowing people to show up for me and being there for me without feeling the need to have to do something to receive it. So I was unlearning that and learning to just allow people to be there. And so I was already just in awe and full of gratitude to see just the outpouring love and support and just well wishes that I kept getting. But in this particular group chat, of course, I had people ask me, you know, how you doing today? Are you sitting down? Are you resting? You know, how's your healing going? But one friend decided to ask me, well, how are you doing mentally, though? And I remember being completely stumped. Like, it literally took me the entire day to respond back to them because I was just overwhelmed at the fact that somebody finally asked. Somebody finally wanted to look at the other aspects of how much on just my thought process and the way I was viewing things and the way I had to now navigate this new normal that I was about to embark on and experience after having the surgery. The mental component of what I was feeling and the emotions that I was feeling and just the feelings that I had in general. But how did we get to this point? How did I need surgery? What was going on? Well, I'll just back it up and start from the beginning. So early at the top of the year, I remember experiencing very painful periods to the point where it woke me up out of my sleep. The kicker of that is that's normal for me. That was normal for most of my life, that I've always had painful, heavy periods. And so I remember around the spring of this year, I went to my OBGYN or my woman's health doctor and, you know, did the exam, had the annual, all that good stuff. And I remember we were talking in the visit and I was telling her about the painful periods and how they were. And in the conversation, she says, you know, that's not normal, right? And I was like, what you mean it's not normal? She's like, that's not normal. Your periods should not be painful. They should not be that heavy. And so, you know, I began to explain to her how ever since I started my period at 9 years old, like they've always been heavy and painful. And she was like, has anybody ever asked why? Understood why that is? And I told her, no, nobody's ever did anything like that. And so she goes into my chart and starts seeing that I was recently diagnosed with some other different ailments and everything. And she's like, based off the symptoms of these diagnoses, that could be the reason for your period. So has anybody ever linked that or asked why, or did they just diagnose you? And obviously I'm sitting there like, you asking some very good questions. But I know no one's ever, because she couldn't understand why people would just diagnose me and not get to the root of the diagnosis. And she started asking me, well, have you ever thought that, you know, this could be fibroids, that this could be PCOS, and she started naming off all these other things. But I remember I actually ended up tuning her out because I got so overwhelmed, because that was the first time a doctor started to actually ask why. A doctor finally, for me, started to really look at the things that I was feeling, actually started to listen to what I had to say, and took my symptoms seriously and began to do the different analyses and breakdowns and asking the necessary questions to get to the root of causing that, which in my 30 plus years of life, I've never experienced in the medical field or any interaction I had in the medical field. So I'm sitting there just floored. And, you know, she's asking me to, you know, expecting me to respond to her and like, what did I want to do, or what did I want, what test did I want to run, and all these different kind of things. And I was just like, ma'am, I can't handle this right now. If I think about it, if I want to go down this route, I'll make another appointment. She's like, okay, well, that's fine. But I think, you know, just sleep on it, think on it. And when you're ready, just make the appointment. We'll see each other again. And that leads me with my healing, was I had to finally admit to myself that I have experienced medical neglect. I have experienced inadequate healthcare, because my experience growing up being a plus size fat Black girl is when I would walk into these doctor's offices, that's exactly what they saw. That's exactly what my diagnosis was. So it didn't matter the symptoms I had, the things I was experiencing. They just saw my weight and my race and automatically knew I had high blood pressure, automatically knew I had hypertension, knew I was pre-diabetic, knew I just wasn't well, and something that needed to be fixed and something that needed to be prescribed on and thrown on a diet and put on these medications. And then when it came to the symptoms I was experiencing, so for instance, the painful periods or the nausea, or I remember one time as a child, I was experiencing back pain and all these different things. They were just, oh, well, here's some medicine to take care of those. Oh, let's put you on birth control to handle your periods. But most importantly, what we need to focus on was this weight, your BMI, your diet, your exercise. We need to put you on this new regimen and all these things. That took up most of the conversation. That's where I experienced the biases and the discrimination of healthcare when it comes to being fat and overweight or plus size, chubby, and any of them adjectives that you use, and how automatically the system of healthcare looks at you as a problem that needs to be fixed. But a much larger issue is that you're a problem that needs to be done with. That matter of fact, you existing are a problem. In an article titled "The Medical Fatophobia, Weight-Based Discrimination in Healthcare Settings," which is written by Marissa Kane, she goes to describe how fatophobia is a barrier that prevents people who are perceived heavier, who are perceived as overweight or big or in larger bodies, ability to receive adequate health care. He goes to talk about how at least 40% of providers have admitted having negative attitudes about people with higher weights or in heavier bodies. And that shows up in the way they tend to provide your medical service, to listen or take seriously of the ailments or the different things that you tend to say. For instance, some of the most common ways that they show up is they ignore symptoms of fat people and assume that everything be solved if they lost weight. And I can't tell you how many times people thought, oh, well, if you get that down to this size, if you get on this diet and you lose this amount of weight, everything will go away. I remember even telling the OBGYN in the appointments later on that was my experience. And I remember her being like, I am so sorry that happened to you. I'm so sorry that people didn't listen to you. Another thing is, in some cases, they require the patients to lose weight in order to get the necessary provisions or care or medications or options for them to be healthy. I remember specifically that I was put on birth control only for the reason to handle my heavy, painful periods. And it worked for a while. But I remember this one particular doctor's office that I went to that I was receiving birth control from, that they kept claiming I had high blood pressure. And that they kept threatening me every single appointment that they were going to take me off of it if I didn't take care of my blood pressure. If I didn't lose the weight to not have the blood pressure. But I'm sitting here like, the reason my blood pressure is high at every appointment is my appointment was at 9 o'clock in the morning. And you don't see me till 2 p.m. And I don't see the doctor until 2:33. Of course my blood pressure is high. But no, they saw the big girl. They saw the big black girl. And automatically assumed, oh, that's what it is. Oh, she don't need their birth control. She need to get that weight down. She need to get that blood pressure down. And still to this day, I still have doctors assuming I have it. And they genuinely be shocked when they take my blood pressure and it be average or normal. There was only one time my blood pressure was elevated and I was stressed the entire appointment getting there. A major one is using the BMI as a measurement of health. I can't tell you how much that damn chart haunted my life growing up, only to learn BMI was a grossly inaccurate measurement of health. Honestly, it had nothing even to do with health. It was part of a pseudoscience that justified the concept of eugenics. And for anybody who don't know what eugenics is, just simplify it. It basically was a fake science used to justify the inhumane treatment of people who were not white, cis heterosexual male. That's who that measurement was determining was the standard of health, was the ideal measurement of what healthy, of what human looked like. So if you did not meet that standard, if you could not measure up to those figures, you weren't healthy, you weren't human, and you weren't worthy of being treated well. So for that to be adopted into the medical field and the medical system to measure up different people, different body types, that in my case, being fat, being black, being a woman, how accurate of a measurement of health can it be? It's not. And of course, when you look at the social stigma of weight loss and health, the most common thing that people tend to think is that overweight patients or heavy patients or fat people are undisciplined and lazy. So when they start to give you different things to do, they look at you or treat you as if you're just not applying yourself, as you're just not being obedient to what they're giving you the direction of. But the truth is that you're tired of having to fight and explain and exhaust yourself. So imagine at the time I was experiencing all this, I was a preteen. I was a teenager who was still learning how to have autonomy, was still learning how to claim my body, accept my body for what it was. I was in these stages of trying to learn who I was, what I was, trying to accept myself, trying to navigate how to love myself. And here I am in this professional setting being told I'm the complete opposite. I have no chance. And even if I did lose weight, because I remember when I was a teenager, I did lose weight one time, that it wasn't enough. That even after I lost so much weight, I was still expected to lose more to meet this standard of thinness that was dictated by this BMI chart that didn't even recognize me as human anyway. Because I remember I had set a goal, 150 pounds. And I had got down to 158. And I remember going into that doctor's appointment, like, proud of myself. And I finally, you know, made the adjustments. And I follow the little 200 calorie diet and all that stuff. And here I am just 8 pounds away from the goal I set. And doctor was pleased and happy with all this stuff. And then said something to the effect of, okay, you're doing great. So when you get down, when you come back in, we'll go from here. We'll go for the next plan of action to get you right where you need to be. In that appointment, you know, of course, smiling and just trying to get through it. But I remember on the inside, it felt like a gut punch. Because what do you mean the next plan of action? There's more? You expect me to lose more? And they did. In that time, I couldn't argue that because that was the norm. That was, you had to listen to the doctor. You had to listen to this system. You had to align with being healthy because don't you want to be healthy? Don't you want to live a good life? Don't you want to not have that weight on you and all these different kind of things? And then, of course, the media makes it worse when they tell you what beauty is and what fashion is and what will make people like you. And I think the most devastating part of that is how I had a crash course in learning how inhumane I was being treated in both the world I was existing in and the medical field, because I saw a genuine shift in how people treated me once I lost that weight. People started to listen to me, starting wanting to hang out with me, starting wanting to date me, starting to compliment me. And once again, a gut punch. Because it's like, what have I changed? I still have this same smile. I still have the same personality. I still have these interests and these hobbies and these talents. The only thing that has changed is how I physically got smaller. And for some reason, that signals to the world that I'm now worthy. That destroys you emotionally and mentally at a adult level. So imagine me experiencing this at in my adolescence, where I'm still learning who I am. So in the moments I was sitting in that doctor's office back in April, all that flooded back to me in that moment. And I thought of my inner teenager and the child that had to go through all that. I never expected to confront, but I know I needed to. But the decision next was, how do I move forward in confronting that and going forward with taking power back, in a sense? Because at that point, I felt very deflated because I was feeling all those things and connecting all those dots. Remember, I was talking to a friend about it. And my friend ended up telling me that, you know, now you're the adult. You're not that kid anymore. So what would the adult you do now? And it made me think about that meme that would go viral every now and again that says that I've healed to the point where I'm the adult I needed when I was younger. And in the moment that clicked, in that moment, it was like, no, I am the adult. I am not that teenager anymore. I'm not that little girl anymore who had to sit through that. I can advocate for myself. I can speak up for myself. And now I'm in the presence of somebody who's actually listening to my concerns. So now I am comfortable in doing that. So I think it's time for me to take my power back. And after going through that mindset, I made that next appointment with my OBGYN. And I was like, no, let's go ahead and find out what this is. What is going on? So from there, they ordered some more tests. So for me, I knew it wasn't an autoimmune disease because I've been tested for autoimmune diseases before. So it had nothing to do with that. So it narrowed it down to either fibroids or PCOS, which stands for polycystic ovary syndrome, which both were very common things I've heard about, you know, people that I knew close to me have experiences with or knew someone who had experience with either. And the OBGYN was leaning more towards fibroids, but I wanted to be tested for both to go ahead and have as much information as I can. Because it's better to know and then plan forward than to not know anything at all. So we did the blood work. They ordered an ultrasound. So this was my first time actually having to do an ultrasound. And the test results came back that I did not have PCOS, but it did confirm that I had fibroids. However, it also confirmed that there was something else much larger that was even bigger than the fibroids I had. And that caused my doctor to have a concern. So more tests were added, and that made me more concerned because now we're dealing with the healthcare system again, but in the way that deals with the mess that is going on with this administration and how they've been attacking Medicaid and the Affordable Health Care Act, or which is Obamacare. That's the insurance I have. So everything that they're doing to reduce it, to destroy it, to do away with it, it affected how all this stuff was going to get covered. So I was definitely very adamant about trying to get all this done. And luckily, each part of my insurance just flowed and just was able to be taken care of in that time. And that's when I found out I had what is clinically known as a tail gut cyst that was growing very largely on my tailbone or near the tailbone area. And of course, me being an overachiever, I would develop the most rarest cyst you can ever have. All the doctors that had looked at the images agreed that that was what was needed to be taken care of first before they even attacked the fibroids. Because ultimately, you know, I've been living with these fibroids for a minute, so I was used to the periods, I was used to the pain. But this mass, this cyst, gotta go. So they wanted to focus all their energy on that, then they would come back to the fibroids. That was the initial plan. Because now it's time to evaluate how to go about dealing with this cyst. And it was being made very clearly that surgery was becoming the most viable action. The next part that of the emotions I had to deal with was, in a weird way, a vindication. A vindication for my inner child and the teenage me. Knowing that in the back of my mind, it was something deeper than my weight. I knew it had to be something else. But at that age and at that time, I didn't have the language. I didn't have anyone who could speak up and say, maybe we should ask this, maybe we should check that. Or none of the doctors took the initiative to ask more questions. I'm just experiencing these symptoms such as the heavy periods, such as the painful periods, such as I think I was dealing with constipation at the time and back pain. I remember especially at eighth grade, the back pain was so bad I had to carry a pillow like for my whole first semester of eighth grade year because the pain was just that bad. My senior year of high school, the constipation was so bad that I was always getting in trouble for staying in the bathroom too long because they thought I was skipping class. But the truth was I couldn't pass anything. But come to find out, all of that was symptoms of these fibroids and this cyst. So all this time, it took me in my 30s for somebody to finally address that. So it made me look back at those little girls, that teenager. And I was so happy for her. Like, girl, you knew. You knew that whole time. And I'm so sorry nobody believed you, but I believe you now. And I'm going to stick up for you now. I am going to advocate for us now. And then comes another thing of dealing with fibroids. It's although they are very common. Matter of fact, up to 80% of women develop them by the age of 50. And it's approximately known, according to Johns Hopkins medicine, that between 20 to 50% of women will have them by their reproductive age. And that number only increases when you look at it in Black women. I remember a most famous case about this was Lupita Nyong'o, very famous actress, of course, been in several movies and notably known for being in Jordan Peele's Us and, of course, her Oscar award-winning role in 12 Years a Slave. She had recently was making an advocacy for fibroids and the research of learning more, because the very same night she won the Oscar, that next day she went to an appointment and found out she had 30 fibroids. And after having them removed, she wanted to help with the advocacy and was shocked to know that there was so little known about fibroids. Like, still to this day, they don't know what causes them and why Black women are more disproportionately affected by them than any other race of women. So mentally now, I'm in that statistic with her. What is known about fibroids, other than them being common, is that they are fueled by hormones, by family history, and different kind of factors of that way. And they basically, how they function, they feed off of the menstrual cycle and the hormones that go into that. So that's what causes the heavy bleeding, because they take on so much of that process, feeding off of their blood, feeding off of those changes that the body is making, and, you know, to sustain itself. But also that one of the other things that it affects is your fertility. And as someone who's never had kids, it made me really have to sit with the possibility that that could really be affected. So now I have to sit and deal with the fact that because of this neglect, this impacts the kind of future I could have or want to have. And so I found myself sitting and making these very heavy, deep choices with my health, with my body, with my future, really hanging in the balance of that. And I will say that honestly became a blessing in disguise, because it made me really ask myself, what do you want? What is the life that you see for yourself? Really be very clear, very specific, very direct about that. And so throughout this whole process of these doctors trying to find the best methods of surgery, trying to find out the best ways to assess the situation, I was also asking myself and assessing my life and assessing and asking questions of myself to get to the root of what I wanted, what I needed, what I saw for myself, what was aligned with where I was going and what I wanted to do. And honestly sit with the reality that after I have this surgery, something that I considered the way my body was normal is not. And so preparing myself to live a new normal, you know, especially with me being on this journey of love and relationships, I want to include children in part of that. Did I want to start a family or have a family? What does family look like? So I was asking myself all these very interesting, weird, unique, challenging, adult-ass questions. So we get to the point where the doctors in my hometown don't feel comfortable doing the surgery. So they refer to me to doctors in Atlanta. So we get to the appointments, go to the doctor that they recommend, only for that doctor to not feel they are the best person to do it. So they refer me to another doctor within the same field who happens to specifically deal with cysts that are attached or very close to the tailbone. And he comes up with a plan like, okay, we're going to cut you in the back, but we're going to remove your tailbone just a little bit. I'm like, remove my tailbone? What? And so, I do these all the time. So, you know, you may miss a little bit of your tailbone, but that's about the risk we have right now. Only to find out it is actually much larger than he anticipated. So if he were to remove it near my tailbone, that it would actually be more damaging because it wouldn't be able to fit out the incision that they were expecting. So the other option was to actually go through my stomach to get to it. Now here comes a problem. If they went that route, they run smack dab into the largest fibroid I have, which was half the size of the cysts, the tailgut cyst was between the Granny Smith apple and a grapefruit. And that was already nerve-wracking to think that those things were able to grow that big in my body all this time. Okay. Now we have to remove both the cyst and the fibroids. So that means he needs to add another doctor. This is where, once again, I'm dealt with some mental, emotional challenges. The reason I'm having these surgeries is because of the medical neglect of the doctors I experienced, only to have to fully trust doctors again to do this surgery. Man, the mental gymnastics of that alone was a lot. Going to my ancestors, going to God, and literally them saying, like, look, the reason we're passing you through, the reason you are going through this, because we want you to deal with the best people possible to give you the best outcome. And it made me think back to in my life when I would do things that were aligned with my best benefit and how smoothly everything would just flow. And I started to notice that even though I was weary, even though I was worried and mentally it was taxing, I remember the ease of the entire process of how they were quick to make sure that certain procedures were approved, that certain doctors were available, and that the doctors said clear out that they didn't feel comfortable. They weren't going to deal with it. They were going to send me to the best. They were going to send me to the best they knew. They were going to send me to the best they knew. And I was like, wait, that's the pattern. Everything that's been aligned with me, that has benefited me, has gone through a pattern of ease. So when talking with them about my ancestors and talking to God about it, they were like, just flow with it. Trust us. We got you. And so I went into it and just trust the process. So basically, we end up doing I believe it's called a Tamisis, T-A-M-I-S, robotic assist procedure, where basically they make these small little incisions and stick these rods in where they use these robotic arms to conduct the surgery through, you know, different scopes and everything like that. That caused them to bring in a OBGYN surgeon. I had two options along with the removal of the cyst when it came to the fibroid. Is I could do what is called a myectomy. Is basically a procedure where they just go in and actually individually cut off fibroid itself or the fibroids, whatever they are. Because at this time I learned I had multiple ones. Or I could have a hysterectomy. And for anybody who doesn't know what a hysterectomy is, that is the surgery of removing parts of the reproductive system, because there are several types of hysterectomies you can have, but essentially they remove the uterus, they remove the cervix, they can remove the ovaries or the fallopian tubes, or a combination of each of those or all of those. The challenge with that is, I remember the doctor was like, you can do either or, but here's the risk of both. If I chose to do my myectomy, then there was a chance, of course, that the fibroids could come back. But I, based off the symptoms that she listed, and I'll spare y'all the details, there was a consensus of that I would have nothing but difficult pregnancies if I chose to try to have children. On the other end, if I had the hysterectomy, I would never be able to carry or possibly have children. So going back to those very heavy, deep choices I had to make in knowing what I wanted, knowing what I needed, being very clear on the life I saw for myself. And I remember the doctor asked me that question 3 times, and because I had to make a decision for that day so that way they can go ahead and have the surgery scheduled and we do it. So she gave me time to think about it. She was like, you know, regret is real, and people, you know, think twice or they have regrets about it and second guess on it all the time. So I want to make sure you know what you're doing, you know what you're asking. But for me, there was only one clear option. And I instantly thought about all these cases, even as recently as a couple of days ago, of women, black women, losing their lives due to medical malpractice and discrimination of not taking their pain seriously with giving birth. I mean, the woman who ended up suing the hospital because they turned her away when she was active labor. She had the child in the car. I mean, going back to earlier in this year with Adriana Smith and how she literally was kept alive only to keep her baby alive to be born due to the rollback of Roe versus Wade. And then thinking back to my own experience with the medical malpractice, you think I want to put myself in a position to experience that? Absolutely not. No. That I never wanted to have things such as a C-section or having to have alternate surgeries or anything like that just to bring a child into the world. I didn't want to put that kind of pressure or that pain or that difficulty. But to know that if I chose one route, that would be my reality for the rest of my life. So for me, hysterectomy was the absolute best option. Like, first, why would I want to carry a child into this world to have to deal with that too? It just felt easy to make the decision. But now I have to deal with the societal pressure of not wanting kids, because I made it very clear. And I thought for me, having a hysterectomy made it very clear. I don't want kids. I love them. I like kids too much for myself, that I knew the best possible thing was me for the love on the ones that are here and that are around me. And what even inspired more of that decision was the very same people who are checking on me, who are caring for me, who are pouring out as I was in recovery, all of them have kids. Have my little nieces and nephews. I claim them all, you know, or some of them just had babies. I had three friends have three babies this year. And I'm like, I have all these babies around me I can just pour into, that I can just love on. And it's interesting how at the same time all of this is going on, unfortunately, in the internet streets, this conversation by transphobic and homophobic cishet women are upset at the fact that they are being acknowledged or called cis because they want to be just women. And then they start to justify that by saying things like, well, real women have this ability. They can have children. They have uteruses. They have da 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 da. I don't have a uterus anymore. So by your definition, I'm not a woman. You know, I'm not a real woman. With you trying to be hateful or trying to other yourself or distance yourself, you say things that are demoralizing, dehumanizing to uplift yourself. Doesn't that sound familiar? Because that's exactly what this system does to us, that leads to the discriminating practices, that leads to Black women being disproportionately affected by medical neglect, us dying at a higher rate when trying to give birth to children, us dying higher at a rate with people not believing us, not believing we deserve protection, not believing that we deserve health care, not believing that we deserve the right to exist in the bodies that we have, in the skin that we are in, and just being. That's why it's devastating. That's why people are calling you out when you are saying these kind of devastating things online to prove and acknowledge your quote unquote womanhood. That's what makes it damaging. That's what makes it destructive, because unknowingly you add and embolden this system that already wants to destroy us, already doesn't see us as human. But I say all that to say that in that moment, I thought about all of this and I was like, no, Once again, I'm an advocate for me. I'm a stand for me. I'm going to reclaim and define what my womanhood is, what my humanness is, what my fatness and my blackness, all that, what that means to me and what that represents for me. Fast forward, we do the surgery and everything goes smoothly. I only end up staying in the hospital 2 days before I was discharged. And I've been healing ever since.
I remember working in that Urban Outfitters, locking in, just folding up jeans. Singing out in Memphis, trying to be a star. 4 songs on a purple CD. Baby had them big dreams, I picked a bet on me. Folks laugh, I tell them you gon' see. Way back, I'm talking Old Navy. I thought I hit the lottery, but nowadays I just wanna get my shine. They say all things work out in due time, but I'm overdue, watch the clocks tick tock, and I'm still tryna believe in those better days. Hey girl, you're living out our dreams. You've seen the whole world, but all the pain we lived, you made it worth it. You seen the happy end, you made us proud, proud, yeah. If pressure makes diamonds, these tears must be mine.
Kirby with Better Days. Man, I don't know who foot Kirby put into that music, but sis has been on it with the rollouts and the vulnerability and the blackness and the countryness, and just I just love all the realness and transparency that she's putting out. And that song definitely embodies the place that I am after going through all of this, is that I know without a doubt better days are coming, and they start right now for me. Because as I was saying, where I am now on my healing journey, emotionally, mentally, physically, I am so grateful for, because I really did start a new life. That's what it feels like, because I really am on this journey of sustaining the mindset that I have of going after absolutely everything that I am clear about, everything that I dream about, everything that I aspire to, everything that through that process I made very clear of my wants, my needs, my aspirations, the life that I want, that is attainable, is reachable, and that I'm going by any means necessary to make it happen. So in a way, me having this surgery really did give me a new lease on life, gave me a new normal to start with. It made me truly look back at my entire life. You know how they say, like, when people have near-death experiences or close to the end of that time, that their life flashes before your eye, for their eyes. Like, literally after the surgery, it was a moment where all the moments of my life literally came back to me and showed me how they all connected to that moment and how everything led me to be where I needed to be. It kind of feels like part of my healing journey was this was the last thing to get rid of. How everything I went through emotionally, mentally, was represented physically in these two diagnoses that once I removed them, now I truly have physically made space to receive new things. To emotionally receive new things. To receive better things, such as the song said, you know. To know that better days are genuinely possible. And now I actually believe that. I know I've said it before. I've been very uplifting. But like without a doubt, I can say I love who I am. I love this fat black body that I'm in. Every inch of it. I move in that way that I love it. I speak to myself in a way that shows that I love it. And I do everything within my power every day since I got out of the hospital to prove it to me, to maintain it to me, to sustain it for me to live in this newfound love. At all the times I felt like, you know, I wasn't on the right track. I was falling behind. I wasn't on the same level as some of my peers, or I wasn't making the milestones as certain other people, that this process literally told me that every detour was leading me back aligned to where I needed to ground myself and reconnect with who I am. Reconnect to what I am and what I possess. So I am extremely excited, nervous, being real. And honestly, a little scared for the future, but at the same time, I have this burst of optimism for what can become of that. And I'm excited to see what's unfolding. My new motto is that even if I worry, even if I'm scared, do it scared. Do it worried. Do it all those things. Do it with the doubt. Just do it. Because honestly, what do I have to lose? I already lost enough. So what else? I refuse to be the last barrier that prevents me from going after everything. Honestly, I'd be damned if I'm the barrier that stopped me from achieving everything meant for me. And honestly, I hope this kind of optimism finds you too. With us being in this final year, with us surviving through so much of this year, understand that at the end of this, there is so many more possibilities that you can reach to. There's so many things you can inspire and go through by simply acknowledging the process that you had to go through to get there. By asking yourself those deep-seated questions that you may even fear to ask because you don't really want to know the answer to yet. But you owe that to yourself. To the man, woman, or individual you were meant to be. And with all the love and sincerity I have, I genuinely hope you do. I know I'm going to do everything in my power, so I do. I'll keep y'all updated. Y'all just check out the shows and we'll see what happens. But ultimately, I'm excited for what my future and my presence holds. So with that being said, y'all, of course, I am on all social medias at Queen Lady AC on Facebook. On Instagram and Threads, it's _IamLadyAC. On Substack, it's Lady AC. And on X or Twitter, it is capital I am Lady AC. So until next week, y'all, take care of yourselves. Tie off them loose ends. Ask them deep questions. But always, go after what's sweet for you. Love you. Bye.